The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of the Three Chests, The Wicked Old Man of the Sea, features domestic violence and murder. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Timo loathed fishing. He was constantly damp. All his clothes stank. But since his wife ran off with their life savings, it was his only means of survival in the frigid Finnish countryside. With one foot in his boat, he untied from the dock, ready to shove off for the day. But the boat wouldn't budge. It seemed to be caught on something. Timo scanned the dark waters. A strange shadow hovered beneath the boat, an ominous, formless mass. Timo sighed, another rock. They constantly rolled off the steep mountains that surrounded the lake. Straddling the water, Timo grabbed his oar to see if he could loosen the debris. He poked at the rock. It didn't feel like a rock at all. It felt soft. He leaned closer to the water. Maybe it was a rotted log or a clump of algae. Timo gasped as two piercing white eyes opened beneath the water. He quickly yanked back on the oar, but it wouldn't budge. Something had a hold of it. A hand shot out of the water and seized Timo by the neck. He felt his throat closing as the eyes moved closer to the surface. It wasn't a rock or a log that he was stuck on. It was something otherworldly. Timo couldn't speak, but he knew exactly what had a hold of him. Vetahinen. His entire life, he had thought the demon fairy of the lake was just a legend. But he was about to be proven painfully wrong. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Spotify original from Parcast. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today, we're telling a Finnish folktale called The Three Chests, The Wicked Old Man of the Sea, about a fisherman and his three daughters who face off with the murderous water fairy, Vetahinen. Coming up, Timo bargains for his life. The English version of The Three Chests, The Wicked Old Man of the Sea, was first written by Parker Fillmore in 1922. A folklorist and teacher, Fillmore began his career using oral stories to teach English in the Philippines. But once back in the United States, Fillmore turned his attention away from the Pacific and toward Czechoslovakia. For the rest of his career, Fillmore was a champion of the folklore of Eastern Europe and Finland. Despite sharing a border with both Norway and Sweden, Finland doesn't consider itself to be a Scandinavian country. Culturally and linguistically, the country has more in common with the Baltic and Slavic regions. Wedged between Nordic countries and Russia, Finland existed mostly as a battleground between the two sides and didn't gain true autonomy until the 20th century. Heavily influenced by outside rule and repeated invasions, many of the folktales of the Finns are adaptations of other European stories with a uniquely Finnish twist. The Wicked Old Man and the Sea is no different. This variation of the Perrault classic Bluebeard features a beautiful, if harsh, environment and protagonists that showcase the Finnish concept of self known as sisu. Sisu means strength of spirit, but is sometimes simply translated as guts, the sort of quality one must have to survive in such a brutal land. Timo Timo fought to breathe as the hand around his neck squeezed tighter, pulling him closer and closer to the water. The other fishermen had warned Timo of the vengeful ruler of the lake. Some called him a god, others an evil fairy, but Timo had never believed the stories before. The tales of him dragging victims to the depths of the lake sounded like a childhood ghost story. But he could not deny the piercing white eyes staring at him, surrounded by long white hair and a tangled white beard. Vetahinen was twice the size of Timo. The water parted as Vetahinen's head emerged from the lake. The fairy snarled at him.
"You are coming with me, fisherman."
Vetahinen jerked down, dragging Timo under the surface in the blink of an eye. The cold water was a shock, soon growing, and his attacker did not slow. The water got darker and colder. Timo's heart sped up. His lungs felt like they would burst at any moment. But Timo still had the oar gripped in his hand. Desperate, he jammed the oar right between Vetahinen's eyes. The creature wailed and released its grip for just a moment. Timo wiggled free and swam as fast as he could toward the surface. He was almost there. He could see the edge of the dock. He shot his hand out of the water and pulled himself through the surface. Timo sucked in a breath of air, but his relief was short-lived. He felt the icy grip of Vetahinen wrap around his foot. Timo couldn't hold on much longer. This was not how the fisherman wanted to die. Timo pleaded,
"Have mercy on me, mighty Vetahinen!"
But the creature just pulled harder. Timo's head sank below, water flooding into his mouth. Choking, Timo craned his head toward the surface and shouted,
"My daughters will die without me!"
Suddenly, he felt the pulling stop. Vetahinen's hand was still grasped around his ankle, but no longer pulling. A voice called out from below,
"Daughters, you say?"
Timo sputtered,
"Yes, three girls, beautiful and bright. Please don't kill me."
Vetahinen tugged at Timo's leg, dipping him just below the surface, but it wasn't a serious attempt at his life. Vetahinen pulled just hard enough to let him know,
"I can kill you at any moment."
Vetahinen floated closer to Timo.
"I'll spare you, fisherman, if you promise me your eldest as a wife."
Timo responded,
"My daughter can't marry some creature."
Vetahinen dragged Timo back down. The fisherman felt his body sink as the creature pulled him to the bottom. The light of the surface disappeared completely. He was surrounded by darkness. The only thing he could see was the white eyes of Vetahinen, inches from his face. The water crushed him from all sides. Timo couldn't last much longer. The fisherman nodded his consent. In the blink of an eye, Timo was thrust back onto the surface. He gasped for air, thankful to be alive. Vetahinen's voice boomed out from the water and echoed off the steep mountains.
"Send my new wife immediately to the dock so I might claim her. If you fail to honor our deal, I'll kill you all."
Timo's stomach twisted into a knot as he swam for shore, the thought pounding in his mind,
"What have I done to my dear Annika?"
The walk back to his home was the longest of his life. He knew he'd never be able to convince Annika to marry the evil fairy of the lake. His eldest daughter was beautiful and vain, the spitting image of her mother. But he would have to think of something if he wanted to keep himself and his other daughters alive. Timo didn't even look up as he entered the house. His youngest, Lisa, and middle child, Krista, shucked corn on the table. It was far from the glamorous life their mother had promised the girls when they were young. Lisa couldn't care less, but he knew the others resented him for their meager lifestyle. Even so, he loved them all dearly. Annika didn't deserve what he had arranged for her. Lisa sprang to her feet and rushed to greet him. She threw her arms around her father, but immediately recoiled.
"Papa, you're all wet. What happened to you?"
Timo didn't answer. Instead, he called out,
"Annika, do me a favor, dear. Could you run down to the dock and grab my fishing pole? I seem to have forgotten it."
Lisa reached for her boots.
"I'll go, Papa."
But Timo grabbed her arm. He hated to send any of his daughters to Vettahinen, but Lisa was barely more than a child. It had to be Annika. As sternly as he could, he forbade Lisa from leaving. Begrudgingly, Lisa went back to the table. Krista never even bothered to look up, mindlessly shucking cob after cob, boredom plastered on her face. Timo again called for his eldest.
"Annika, please go fetch my fishing pole."
Annika stepped out of the girl's bedroom with her coat pulled tight.
"Stop shouting at me, I'm going."
Timo could hear Lisa badgering him, insisting he tell her how he got so wet. But his full attention was on Annika, watching her walk out the door. He prayed it wouldn't be the last time he ever saw her. Annika walked to the end of the dock, her hand covering her nose. The rancid smell of dead fish hung in the air. Her father smelled like that constantly now, ever since Mother left. Her only refuge was hiding in the bedroom. She stared down at the peaceful water below and shook her head.
"The old fool must have lost it along the way. There's no fishing pole here."
But Annika kept staring. Something was in the water. It looked like two glowing white fish. Her curiosity got the better of her. Annika forgot about her disgust at the smell and knelt down. Vettahinen leapt from the water and snatched her from the dock. Before she knew what happened, she was speeding through the water, straight to the bottom of the lake. She tried to scream, but all that came out was bubbles. She fought and struggled, but to no avail. Whatever held her wasn't letting go. Suddenly, Annika wasn't in the water at all. She was on dry land. She didn't recognize where she was. All around her was a dome of water. It was some kind of air bubble on the bottom of the lake. She could see the fish swimming above, with stray beams of sunlight casting long shadows below. Annika stood on the sand and gawked at the majestic castle that laid before her. It wasn't made of stone, but rather the boards of sunken boats. Its twisting spires seemed to touch the bottom of the water. Torches lit a path straight for the front door. Her daze was broken when a deep voice called out,
"Welcome home, my wife."
Annika spun around. Standing behind her was a tall, distinguished-looking man. He was older, with white hair, a long white beard, and white eyes. He was certainly odd-looking, but he wasn't unattractive. Annika blushed.
"I'm sorry, there must be some confusion. I'm not your wife."
But the man moved closer. He held up a giant key ring and smiled.
"You are Timo's daughter, so you are my wife. I am Vettahinen. Take the keys and you will live like a queen. This castle and all that is inside of it is yours."
Annika couldn't help but smile. She'd always dreamed of meeting a prince who swept her off her feet, and anything was better than that cramped cabin. She took the keys and began counting them off. There must have been 100 of them. Annika giggled as she stared back at Vettahinen.
"All this is mine?"
Vettahinen nodded.
"All but what lies behind the white door. That is just for me."
Annika gripped the keys tightly in her hand, her smile even brighter now.
"Of course, husband."
Vetta Heenan took her by the hand and guided her to the door. Annika fingered through the keys in her hand, a single thought already filling her mind.
"I'm going to get whatever is behind that door."
Coming up, Annika gets more than what she bargained for. Hi, it's Vanessa from Parcast. They say there's someone for everyone. A soul to share your secrets with, a companion to grow old with, a conspirator to commit crimes with. Starting this February on Spotify, learn about the lethal and legendary lovers who fought the law in the Parcast limited series Criminal Couples. If you've ever referred to your best friend or beloved as your partner in crime, this exclusive series is for you. Beginning February 1st, join me for a collection of unlawful love stories from shows across the Parcast network. Discover the extreme beliefs of cult leaders Tony and Susan Alamo, enter Fred and Rose West's real-life House of Horrors, and experience the madness and motives of the San Francisco witch killers. Fall for the most famous and feared pairs in history in the Spotify original from Parcast, Criminal Couples. Enjoy two-part episodes every Monday starting February 1st. Follow Criminal Couples free and exclusively on Spotify. Now back to the story. Annika quickly took to life inside the castle at the bottom of the lake. It just felt right to her. She didn't think about being so deep underwater or never seeing her family again. All she thought about were the riches inside the castle walls. Day after day, Annika walked the halls, testing out each new key from the ring. Rooms that contained jewels and gold, art and sculptures, fine silks and linens. She claimed it all as her own. But it wasn't what she wanted. What Annika wanted most was whatever was behind the white door. It was the only room she hadn't inspected, the only room she'd been forbidden from entering. But Vetta Heenan never left the castle, and he always seemed to stay just within earshot of her. She couldn't even walk down the hallway without raising his suspicion. 2 weeks to the day after she arrived, that all changed. Vetta Heenan opened the doors to her chambers. He was dressed in his finest clothes and didn't waste any time with small talk.
"I'll be going to the surface. Do you require anything?"
Annika did her best to contain her excitement. In her dullest voice, she said,
"No, thank you. Do hurry back."
Vetta Heenan gave her a curt nod and turned away. Annika sat perfectly still, listening to her strange husband walk down the hall. As soon as he was gone, she sprang into action. She grabbed the keys and took off in a sprint for the white door. Standing in front of the massive door, she felt her nerves tingling. She just knew that behind this door was her destiny. She put the key in and turned it. With the lightest touch, the door slid open. The room inside was completely dark. There seemed to be no other source of light other than what spilled in from the hallway. Annika stepped into the darkness. As her eyes adjusted, she couldn't help but be a little disappointed. It appeared to be nothing more than storage, filled with old, abandoned chests. But there was something unusual about it. The floor in the center of the room didn't appear to be wood like the rest of the castle. It glistened with a deep, dark red. Annika inched closer and knelt down. On close inspection, she realized it wasn't part of the floor. It was a pool of blood. Annika was more fascinated than horrified. After all, this wasn't any stranger than a wooden castle at the bottom of a lake. She wondered, was this what he's been hiding from me? Annika's thoughts drifted away, however, as something shiny caught a glint of light. On a raised platform in the center of the pool was a golden ring. Her eyes went wide. It was the prettiest piece in the entire castle. She had to have it. Annika leaned out over the pool, stretching out her hand as far as it would go. The ring was just at the end of her fingertips. She grazed the edge of it with her index finger. She was just able to hook it onto her nail. The tip of her thumb touched the surface of the blood as she pinched the ring. She quickly pulled back, victorious. Annika slid the ring onto her finger. It was a perfect fit. She smiled from ear to ear, ecstatic at her new prize.
"This is my castle, and all of it belongs to me. Vetehinen will come around," she thought.
Annika flicked her thumb, trying to get the blood off, but the red mark wouldn't come off. It clung to her skin like tar. She rubbed it against her blouse and wiped it on her shoe, but it did nothing. The blood didn't even stain her clothes, as if it was a part of her skin. Annika didn't mind, though. She could just hide her thumb from her husband. He'd never know. A dark shadow fell over Annika. She turned to see Vetehinen holding a long, sharp sword. He didn't say a word. He simply stared back at her and scowled. With a flick of his wrist, he whipped the sword through the air. Vetehinen cut through her neck in a single stroke. Her head toppled to the floor, followed shortly by the rest of her. Back on the surface of the lake, Timo sat in his boat. The fish hadn't been biting, but the lake was calm and the air was warm. With no fish to catch, it left Timo with plenty of time to think, which, after his encounter with Vetehinen, was one thing he hated more than fishing. His mind never strayed far from Annika. But his quiet day was suddenly interrupted by a tug on the line. Timo jerked back on the pole. The fishing rod snapped in two. Waves crashed all around him. His tiny boat kicked back and forth in the water. He looked to the sky, thinking a storm must be rolling in, but it was clear. Timo's heart sank. There was only one thing that could cause such a scene. The bow of the boat dipped below the surface, water flooding into the vessel. A familiar crown of white hair and two white eyes floated to the surface. Vetehinen pulled Timo's boat down and shouted, his voice echoing off the steep mountainsides.
"You swine! You sent me a deceitful bride. You haven't honored your deal, so I have come back for you."
Timo was neck deep in water, the boat sinking by the second. Timo panicked.
"Stop! Stop! I don't know what Annika did, but I have another daughter. She's just as beautiful and not nearly as troublesome. She'll make a good wife, I promise."
The boat floated back to the surface and the waves stopped. Timo wiped the sweat from his brow. Vetehinen had spared his life again. Timo quickly grabbed his oars and rowed to shore. For the second time, he was going to have to send one of his daughters to the ferry of the lake. Timo opened the door to his home. His two remaining girls sat at the table, pulling string beans from a sack and snapping them into small pieces. Lisa smiled up at him.
"How is the lake, Papa?"
He didn't answer her. He kept his eyes locked on his middle daughter.
"Krista, my dear, would you run down to the shore and fetch my oar? I seem to have forgotten it."
Krista threw her handful of string beans onto the table and pushed her chair back.
"I would love to. Anything is better than breaking beans for hours."
Krista threw on her coat and rushed for the door. Timo took a deep breath and sank into the chair next to Lisa. He could feel her glaring at him, but he couldn't look her in the eye. Timo picked up Krista's beans and began to break them. Lisa cleared her throat.
"You're soaking wet again,"
he stammered.
"I am a fisherman, Lisa. When you're out in the garden, do you not get dirty?"
Lisa slid her chair closer. Timo began to sweat. He could never lie to his youngest. She was too bright. Lisa would notice even the smallest details. Nothing ever got past her, let alone her father returning home, completely drenched. Lisa leaned in closer.
Exactly 2 weeks ago, you came home soaking wet, saying you forgot your fishing pole. You sent Annika down to get it, and she never came home. Today, you come home soaking wet, saying you forgot your oar. Am I ever going to see Krista again?
Timo slid his hands underneath the table so she wouldn't see them shaking. He kept his eyes down as he spoke.
Annika is just like your mother. It shouldn't surprise you that she ran off.
Lisa wasn't buying it. She reached a hand up to his face and turned it toward her.
And I'm like you. You never forget things. When are you going to ask me to pick something up that you forgot?
Timo shook his head as he jumped out of the chair.
Never, Lisa. I will never send you away.
Timo dropped the beans on the table and marched to the pantry. He needed a drink. Lisa watched her father pour himself a tall cup of wine. She didn't know what was going on with her father, but she intended to find out. On Friday, the moon was out before her father returned home. Lisa stared at the door. He was never out this late. It couldn't be a good sign. Finally, the door pushed open. It was her father, soaked to the skin. She took a deep breath.
Have you forgotten something once again, Father?
Timo didn't look up.
Yes, my galoshes down by the shore. Could you go fetch them for me?
Lisa stood and grabbed her coat. She stared her father down as she opened the door.
I don't know what you've gotten us into, but I'm going to get us out.
Coming up, Lisa discovers the fate of her family. Now back to the story. Lisa tried to catch her breath. She looked up, her jaw dropped at the sight of the shipwrecked castle and the swimming fish above. She was in some sort of air bubble at the bottom of the lake. The last thing she had seen before being dragged underwater was her father's galoshes on the shore. She knew it wasn't a coincidence. Whatever brought her here was all because of him. A large, leathery hand reached out to help her up. Lisa turned to her side. It was a handsome, older man with white eyes. She stammered,
Veta Heenan, you're real.
The fairy nodded and smiled at her.
This castle is yours. Welcome home, my wife.
Lisa calmed as the realization set in.
My sisters must be in there.
She had no interest in living in a castle at the bottom of the lake or marrying an evil fairy, but she would do whatever she had to free her sisters. Lisa smiled her best smile and reached for Veta Heenan's hand.
I am honored to be your wife, King of the Lake.
Veta Heenan led Lisa inside and gave her the same instructions as his previous wives. She had the run of the castle as long as she stayed away from the white door. Lisa knew immediately that the white door must be the key to all of this, but Veta Heenan rarely left her alone. She was going to have to gain his trust before she could investigate. While her sisters were rather impulsive, Lisa was extremely patient. She resolved to be the best housewife she could be. Then, she thought,
I can make this lake fairy do whatever I want.
Veta Heenan, Lisa found out, was actually quite easy to live with. He seemed to want more of a maid than a lover. He liked having a warm breakfast and dinner and having his head scratched at night by the fire. Within a week, Veta Heenan was fawning over his new bride, just as Lisa intended. But her plan had backfired. Now she had even less time alone. If she wanted to find her sisters, she would have to get rid of him, at least temporarily. Lisa wandered along the tops of the castle walls, trying to find inspiration. She stared up at the fish swimming above. Her pensiveness was broken when Vetahinen called out,
"My love, what are you doing up here?"
She dropped her head into her hands and feigned weeping. Inspiration had struck. She told him,
"I miss the sun and the sky so much. I love you and my new home, but I wish I could go out for just a moment."
Vetahinen moved closer to his bride and wrapped his arms around her.
"I will take you to the surface. You can see the sky again."
Lisa shook her head.
"No, you're used to the water. You don't understand. I need to do something outside. Could I make a request?"
The fairy lifted her chin. His voice was soft.
"Name it, my love."
Lisa looked up.
"Could you take the butter churn up to the mountaintop? I would love to make something underneath the sun, looking across the lake. I would be forever grateful."
A long beat passed as Vetahinen considered. Lisa tried to look as sad as possible. Finally, Vetahinen smiled.
"The butter churn is too heavy for any man to haul to the mountaintop, but I'm not a man. It'll take me only a few hours."
Vetahinen kissed Lisa on the forehead and hurried away. Lisa leaned over the edge of the wall and watched as her husband dragged the heavy churn out of the castle and into the water. Once he was out of sight, she sprinted away. Lisa ran through the halls, making a beeline for the white door. She held the key ring in her hand, flipping through them until she found the right one. Lisa opened the door. A moment later, she screamed. Not at the sight of the blood-red pool or the glimmering gold ring in the middle of the room, but at the two headless bodies lying next to it. She had found Annika and Krista. Lisa ran to her sisters and knelt by their remains. Tears streamed down her face. She picked up Krista's hand and held it close. But her sobs stopped as she noticed something strange. The tip of Krista's fingers were stained red with blood. She grabbed Annika's lifeless hand. It too had blood-red tips. Lisa couldn't figure it out. If Vetahinen cut off their heads, why were their hands bloody? Her eyes drifted toward the pool next to them and the shining ring in its center. Lisa's heart broke. She knew her sisters well, so it wasn't hard to piece together what had happened. They had been greedy and couldn't resist the ring. Lisa looked around the room, seething.
"Is there nothing in here but these stupid chests?"
But the chests gave her an idea, one that brought her at least some peace. She could use them to give her sisters a proper burial. She dragged one of the chests from the corner, but stopped. There were two jars tucked away behind it, written on the side of one, "Water of Life," and the other, "Water of Death." Hope glimmered within Lisa. It seemed worth a shot. Lisa lined up her sisters' heads with their necks and poured the water over each in turn. The sisters bolted straight up, their heads reattached to their bodies. Lisa couldn't believe it. The water worked. She threw her arms around both of them and held them tight. The sisters cried and thanked her, but Lisa cut the reunion short.
"We don't have time for that just yet. I've got to get you out of this castle. Hold tight, and don't try and get that ring again."
Lisa jumped to her feet and kicked open a chest. It would be a perfect fit. Lisa pointed to her sisters.
"Annika, get in here. Krista, get in that one. I've got an idea."
The sisters did as they were told. Lisa slammed the chests shut and dragged them to the front of the castle. From outside, she could hear Vetahinen approaching. Lisa bent down and whispered,
"Whatever you do, don't make a sound."
Vetahinen entered, wet and exhausted from his trek. Lisa ran and kissed her husband.
"Thank you so much, my dear. Now, could you do me another favor? I found these chests lying around, so I filled them with odds and ends from the castle. Could you please take them to my father? I miss him so and want him to know I'm all right."
She could tell Vetahinen wanted to say no. Through a tight smile, he answered, reaching for the latch on one of the chests.
"Of course, love. I'll do it right away. What are you sending him anyway?"
Lisa stomped her foot on the trunk.
"You said everything in here was mine outside of the white door, so it's none of your business what's inside."
She ran her fingers through his hair and gave his head a scratch. Vetahinen relented. He lifted the chests, putting one on each shoulder, and trudged back out. The moment he was in the water, Lisa went back to work. She had no time to waste for the next step of her plan. She ran back down the hallway to the white door. She grabbed another chest and the Water of Death. Lisa pulled the chest back to the front of the castle. She quickly scribbled a note and set it on top. With the Water of Death in one hand, Lisa ran outside and jumped into the icy lake. The water felt like pins stabbing into her skin, but she had to push through. She swam as fast as she could toward the surface. Lisa broke through the waves, gasping for air. Quickly, she swam to the shore and sprinted up the mountain to the butter churn. She emptied the Water of Death into the barrel and moved it precariously close to the edge. Lisa picked up a log and leaned it against the churn. She threw her coat over the log and smiled. From the right angle, she was sure it would look like her churning butter. Lisa looked out over the lake. Far in the distance, she could see Vetahinen walking down the dock. She panicked. The trail was too long. She would never make it back before Vetahinen. Her plan would fail and her whole family would be killed. But that wasn't an option. Lisa took a few steps back and sprinted for the cliff. She leapt off, diving toward the lake far below. She straightened her body into a point, shooting like an arrow into the water. Lisa broke through the surface and shot right to the bottom. She popped through the air bubble and ran inside the castle. She could hear Vetahinen close behind. Lisa jumped into the chest and slammed the top shut. Vetahinen opened the front door. His steps were heavy and his breath was labored. He read from her note aloud.
"I have one more chest for Papa. Please take it to him. I'm up on the mountain churning butter, so I'll be watching you. Don't peek. Love, Lisa." "She better not ask for another favor the rest of the year."
From inside the chest, she could feel Vetahinen dragging the chest across the sand. She smiled and held her breath as he dove into the water. She forgot how fast he could move. Before she knew it, they were back on dry land. Her plan was working. She had to clasp her hand over her mouth to keep from giggling. The chest dropped and Lisa hit the ground hard, but she didn't dare make a noise. She could hear Vetahinen sucking in air as he stomped back through the forest.
"I'm putting an end to these gift boxes."
Lisa cracked open the top and peered out. Vetahinen was back in the water now, swimming straight for the mountain. She stood up as Timo and her sisters rushed out of the house to greet her. Lisa told them all to be quiet and pointed toward the mountain. Wrapped arm in arm, the family watched Vetahinen climb up the side, straight toward what appeared to be Lisa churning butter. They could hear him grousing, his voice echoing across the lake.
"I'm not dragging one more of those cursed chests, do you hear me?"
Vetahinen reached his hand up to the edge of the mountain. The loose rock gave way, the butter churn tipped over, and the Water of Death washed over him. He screamed in agony, plummeting hundreds of feet back toward the lake. By the time he hit the water, he was dead. Lisa had saved them all. The Three Chests, the Wicked Old Man of the Sea is a folktale that follows a familiar pattern. A young wife discovers the horrors her husband keeps behind a locked door and must save herself and seek vengeance for his sins. Because of this, the story is typically seen as a feminist tale. But it's about more than just female oppression. This kind of story often pops up in places where the entire culture has been oppressed by outsiders. In 1835, Elias Lönnrot published the first edition of a Finnish epic folktale, Kalevala, and ignited feelings of pride in the homeland. After 700 years of Swedish and Russian rule, the wave of nationalism that swept through 19th century Europe had made it to Finland. The Finns, whose language had solely been oral until the 16th century, finally began to write down their own stories. In 1917, Finland gained true, lasting independence. While Kalevala might have been one of the first published Finnish folktales, it doesn't capture that strength of spirit and resilience, that sense of sisu, the same way the Three Chests does. It's a story at its heart of quiet revolution, of biding your time, waiting for the right moment, and through measured actions, breaking free. The strategy is not for everyone, but if you've got sisu, you can do it. Thanks again for listening to Tales. We'll be back next Wednesday with a new and exciting story. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify. If you enjoy listening to Tales, you'll love my other podcast, Mythology. Mythology retells our oldest stories as an engaging audio drama. Every Tuesday, join me and a cast of voice actors as we dramatize the enduring legends that have shaped human culture since the very beginning. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales is a Spotify original from Parcast. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Carrie Murphy, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Travis Clark. This episode of Tales was written by Jesse Harris, with writing assistance by Andrew Kelleher, fact-checking by Adriana Romero, and research by Mickey Taylor. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Hi, it's Vanessa again. Before you go, don't forget to check out the new Parcast limited series, Criminal Couples. From apocalyptic cult leaders to bank-robbing bandits to married mafiosos, these couples give new meaning to Till Death Do Us Part. Enjoy two-part episodes every Monday starting February 1st. Follow Criminal Couples free and exclusively on Spotify.